All right. I will give you a bag of popcorn if you could tell me who is on the saxophone in this tune, which is titled Now's the Time. I might even give you a bag and a half popcorn. That's how generous I am. Anyway, it is Free Your Mind Friday, and I'm glad you're with us. And we need to be talking about things that you want to talk about today. That's what it's all about. Free Your Mind Friday is an open forum. I'm just explaining for those of you joining us perhaps for the first time. What is Free Your Mind Friday? We dispense with our regular programming and people call in to express their views about something they believe is important, or something they have on their minds and they have a strong view about. And that is to allow for a different kind of discussion. It's not important whether you agree or disagree with the person presenting their mind's view, but it is about learning how to communicate publicly what it is you're thinking, making your point, being pretty methodical about it. And that's the best you can do. That helps you acquire certain skills. Top of the list is the skill of communicating, of presenting your point of view, and also to invite reaction. And that is what leads us to being ready and able and capable at any time of presenting our points of view. It's not for you to, it's not this, this is not a session for you to just talk and yammer. You ought to have a point. So please make sure you have a point to make about something, a strong point, and let us hear how you defend your point of view. And that's all we ask. All right, Henry from Chicago starts us off. Thanks, Henry, for calling in. You're on the air.
Hey, Truth, how's it going?
It's going.
Same here. I want to wish you and the Lead Stories on PRN listeners a happy, productive, and safe weekend. I
Well,
wanted
thank
to touch
you.
on. Thank you. I wanted to touch the topic on what happened in Haiti and the assassination of Jovenel Moise. And it's an interesting thing because I am what I self-proclaim as a amateur Haitian historian.
Okay.
It was formatted in when I read C.L.R. James' The Black Jacobins some years ago, and it caught my interest in it because then I started reading other books from the contemporary historian scholars who wrote about it in regards to James, John Henry Clark, and our own residential historian, Dr. Gerald Horn, as well. But what also interests me is when I started finding some of the primary sources that these scholars had used in regards to, how they formulated their history. There were guys like Thomas Madeau, Bourbon Ardoun, who had these documents online, and they were all in French. But what's so great about today's technology was I was able to translate those to English and was able to get it. Now, these weren't perfect translations, but I kind of understood what they were, talking about. But what I found interesting was the assassination is generally rooted in Haitian history. Now, we romanticize the Haitian Revolution, and it's rightfully recognized as the first Black Republic born out of a slave rebellion. And that's all well and good. But as I was looking at these documents and also finding other documents from historians that has done histories that were close to the same time, I kind of find it interesting that, you know, as we glorify these leaders of the Haitian Revolution and also the Haitian leaders that came after the revolution, we have to also look at some of the faults that they had in regards to managing, you know, this island or this nation called Haiti. And, you know, it's said that Moïse was the third Haitian leader in history that, you know, has been assassinated. And this includes the first leader of the Republic of Haiti, which was Jacques-Jean Dessalines. And I think Kim Ives yesterday had mentioned that. But what was interesting is, you know, reading the history of Jacques-Jean Dessalines and his, you know, his leadership when the nation formed. You know, the thing about Jacques-Jean Dessalines was he was a military leader, but not really a political leader, which basically caused some of his enemies to kind of assassinate him. Because, you know, many people had said that, you know, he was a guy who was assassinated by his own people. But what I also found interesting is throughout the successive years of the 19th and 20th century, there was a lot of turnover in Haitian leadership. And most of them were, you know, done by coup d'etats or outright assassinations of the leaders. So as you look deeper into the history, you find that many of the leaders, and it's interesting, like I said, when we talk about, you know, the Haitian Revolution, you know, there's this identity issue that formulates, at least for me, it kind of formulates where there's an issue of a political and national identity that Haiti has. Now, culturally, you know, it's easy to form a cultural identity, and that's through, you know, Toussaint, where he kind of, you know, gathered everybody together in regards to, you know, abolishing slavery. But I think the point that I'm trying to make, going all the way from the beginning of this republic to now, is that what the problem I think it is the leadership not dealing with the social divisions of the people in regards to class, colorism, and education. And this is where the foreign powers like France, the United States, Spain, takes advantage of, you know, the leadership. And this is why we have, you know, puppet governments, puppet leaders from the United States to, you know, to kind of manage Haiti. And I think the ultimate thing is that identity should not just be forged against what you are against, but it also should be forged on what you are for. And I think that's what the Haitian leadership is missing. So when they forge this identity upon the abolition of slavery, I think it just kind of ended there, and they just kind of, you know, just kind of like went along on, you know, how should we form this republic? Because, you know, many times it's been, you know, it's been a republic, it's been a monarchy, you know, several times. Actually, there have been a time where Haiti was split, you know, between North and South. So this political identity that they're still trying to forge after, you know, 200 something years still lingers on. And this is what, you know, this is what they need to do in regards to trying to forge a political identity so they won't have these issues.
Well, I have to ask you a couple of questions.
Mm-hmm.
You said quite a bit, except nobody went to school. YMCA.
Hello?
Yes, I'm hearing you. Are you hearing me?
Well, you cut off for a minute. You were about to ask a question.
I said, do you know of any revolution wrought by people who went to college to study how to conduct a revolution?
Mm-hmm.
Let alone people who did not have much of a formal education or anything like that. This was a do-it-yourself kind of revolution based on instinctual premises rather than scientific political applications. No, they didn't do that. Mm-hmm. It was, in fact, it continues to be a miracle that out of the mess that Haiti was in to begin with, that you had minds still logical enough to conceptualize the idea of founding a nation. It's an enormous thing to do.
Yeah.
They never really saw themselves or people like them in leadership capacities, but let alone national leadership capacities. It just didn't happen. Mm-hmm. So we have to be mindful all the time that the miracle of a nation being born under these circumstances actually succeeded with all of the things going against it and without having a scientific approach, if you will, to how you do this. How do you create a nation? How do you bring along everybody, those who are educated, those who are somewhat educated, those who have no education, those who have a little bit of money, those who have no money? How do you forge a nation? Even talk about that concept of founding a nation, your own nation, where you make the rules and you live according to the rules you want to live by. This continues to confound me. I don't know how they did that.
It is amazing. Like I said, I'm not condemning them for doing that. But I mean, because there were very smart people who formed it. But I think the problem is, and I contrast this to other nations formed out of revolutions, like the United States. And even nations that were already nations, but they, you know, transformed their whole political ideology, like Cuba. So take, for instance, Cuba, who under Castro, you know, went from a repressive, so-called democratic idea of Batista, who was just, a puppet for the United States government, and transformed it into a Marxist kind of communist, you know, colony. And he stayed in power for, you know, roughly 50, 60 years, I believe, until his death. But the thing was that he was able to forge some sort of political identity and also keep away those who were not in his camp as far as political identity, and also those who kind of favored what the United States wanted, you know, Cuba to look like. So he got rid of all those guys. Whereas what I'm finding in like Haitian history was, you know, when you talk about the leaders that basically kind of, some of the generals that assassinated, say, Dessalines, they were French-educated and French-thinking type of generals. And by the time he realized it, it was basically too late. Now, going back up to Jovenel Moise, you know, he was obviously surrounded by, you know, people who were controlled by U.S. interests. And then when he, you know, when it was decided that he was no longer a beneficial, then he gets taken out. So I think the thing, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. You finish up.
Oh, so I think that part of the process, and it is a hard process. I'm not saying that it's not an easy process, but one guy cannot cannot form a nation. And even when we, you know, even when some people, you know, basically, you know, give Castro this credit of, you know, forming this revolution in Cuba, it wasn't just him. There were many others who were behind him. And I think, you know, we kind of give too much blame when a nation does not succeed, but then we give too much credit to people, you know, who have formed this new idea of a nation, you know, and same thing with like, say with the United States. You know, George Washington wasn't a political leader. You know, he was a regular general, but he had people around him to forge this, you know, particular political identity to keep the United States up and going and keep it from being invaded by Britain and all the other, you know, European nations that, you know, that looked to take them out during that time.
Well, what I could tell you is that this business of studying the formation of nations will take a long time. It's a very complicated process. And we can't really come to conclusions, you know, snap conclusions, because we ourselves have little idea about how do you forge a nation? How do you get that process going? And how do you envision a nation working? No one person does it. But in the end, you do have a leader, and supposedly the leader understands the importance of consultation with all others. It's a daunting process. I don't know how they do that. But Haiti still remains a shining example of what remains every single time, and that is a thirst for freedom. And that's where people start. If the people are thirsting for freedom and want to form their own nation, their own country, live according to their standards and will, the question is, who is going to be in the leadership of it? Who is going to bring all parties together, presumably, although that's not always the way it works out? A nation ends up reflecting, for the most part, the people with power and influence, and not the majority of people. So it is a constantly evolving thing. And we can't give up. We can't give up on Haiti at all. Haiti remains an example of the continuing struggle for self-determination and dignity and the right to live according to your own concepts, your own will. And it's a work in progress. That's all I could tell you. It's a work in progress. The United States would like people to believe, well, all that work has been done. We are now perfect. We are a perfect union and all of that. That's nonsense. Absolute nonsense. But at least it recognizes it can't fool the people. People understand that this is far from a perfect union, and it has a long way to go. The question is, how do you get there? What are the processes by which you forge a nation? There's no timetable, so how long it should take before it, you know, you test it just like fudge, and you put a little bit of that batter in, and it gels, and you say, okay, it's time, it's good. No, it takes much more than that. Well, you got us started today. Thank you, Henry. Thanks for calling in.
All right, thanks.
Jean from Maryland, you're on the air. What are you freeing your mind of today?
Friday.
Hello.
You know, hi, happy Friday, Utrice.
Thank you.
Are you hearing? Yeah. So it just occurred to me as I was sitting there listening to you and Henry, I think you need to take some credit for the high level of discussion. Can you imagine a caller like Henry calling in with that kind of value and history to the Bob Grant Show or Curtis Sliwa? It never happened. Never happened. So I just thought some congratulations to you and Lead Stories is in order. So,
well, if you're going to congratulate me, I'd like to change the pronoun a little bit from me to us. This is
all
a
right,
group
I'll
effort.
Take that.
Thank
I'll
you.
I'll take that. So to pick up where Henry left off on Haiti, something else, a little more contemporary, occurred to me as I'm watching the news as these things begin to unfold around the assassination of President Moïse in Haiti. We have seen this recently where the U.S. government sent a hit squad to Venezuela that failed and was apprehended by a bunch of fishermen at the coastline. Now, I think the only difference we're seeing here is that the government and the people of Venezuela were a little more organized and a little stronger than the Haitians were. But the effort to send these hit squads to do damage to these governments, I think, is the same. And I as they've now become, or as they've now begun to sort of parade these people that have been apprehended, you've got two U.S. citizens who are residents of Miami, and four former Colombian military mercenaries who have been apprehended and are being displayed for the public to see. I find that action to be very, very similar between the actions against Venezuela and the actions now against Haiti.
Okay.
Well,
and what should we take away from your observations?
Well, aside from the fact that both Venezuela and Haiti have been under attack from the U.S. government and others, that are aligned with the U.S. government for quite some time, I just find it interesting that these attacks continue, and not just continue, but they're escalating to the point where we're seeing armed parties crossing borders and conducting these kinds of exercises. I find
also,
that to be...
What are we also seeing?
Well, that they're being apprehended.
Well, okay, but what else are we also seeing that is extremely important?
Well, I think that it's this kind of action is crossing political parties here in the U.S., whereas the actions against Venezuela were implemented by the Trump administration, and these actions here, not to point directly and say that it was the Biden administration that did this, but it happened during the Biden administration, and whatever the responsibility is, I think that's yet to play out, and we'll watch for
hold it right
boost.
There. We'll watch. That's what we're seeing. There is no indication yet, although there should be, of public outrage. There's no indication of the people going to the streets saying this is not how our government should behave. We do not condone this action. There's no organized protest about it. And it has happened every time, except the last time, I think, was the Vietnam War, when people finally decided to mobilize. But look at what has happened, look at what is alleged, and the people are quiet. There is no outcry. There is no demand for an explanation or further investigation. There is no wagging of a finger of blame at the government at the moment. People are quiet.
Well, I think that people are quiet, well, for a few reasons. I think, number one, it's Haiti. And in the eyes of the typical American, Haiti doesn't warrant the kind of outrage
and exercise.
Yeah, but
the point is, that's insufficient as an explanation, as you well know. You either are committed to justice and peace, as you say you are, or you're not.
Well, we're not.
You can't say, well, it's Haiti, and, you know, we have a particular feeling about Haiti. The point of it is this. A president was assassinated. A president of a country was assassinated on Wednesday morning. And to this hour, there has been no evidence of an inordinate response by the people of the United States, although people are saying, or it has been said, that the United States ex-military people were involved, and there are other things implicating the United States in this heinous act. We're not seeing, and I'm not saying it's true or not true, I'm saying among the people themselves, we see nothing.
I am agreeing with you and extending that agreement to the point that as Americans, we accept a large amount and an outrageous amount of lawlessness, of immoral action in the things that the country does, that the government does in the name of America. And so when these sorts of things happen, they are accepted, they are glossed over, they are justified, you know, regardless of how wrong they are.
And yeah, but even here in our conversation, you seem, well, no great discomfort about it. Most people don't have a great discomfort about it. We have already acclimated to a grotesque action allegedly by the United States, and no one is demanding an explanation. No one is mobilizing to demand an explanation. It is not a topic of discussion in our halls of power, in our legislatures. Nobody's raising any questions about it. It's as if, you know, well, that's Haiti. And that's the latest chapter of Haiti's history. It's not us. We don't have to worry about it. That is particularly disturbing. That U.S. citizens who like to present themselves as being conscious of justice issues and how this country is behaving itself in the international community. And we have nothing said, nothing in Congress, in the Senate, in any state legislature, in places like New York, which has a very large Haitian population. We have nothing said, and that's okay.
It shouldn't be okay. And I just wonder if we as Americans, more generally, have been softened up to the point where these kinds of things go on and are seen as acceptable or easily ignored to the point where they happen, and then we're
you're postulating a feasible explanation for why there is no hue and cry. I'm asking the exact opposite. Why is there no hue and cry? How could we, when we intone our admiration for the people of Haiti and for the island itself and what it has accomplished, and since Wednesday, when this happened, it's shown up only as blurbs, short blurbs on news programs, but we do not see attitudes and actions consistent with the people who are conscious of the need to champion democracy here. This is our job. We are supposed to demand democratic ideals of our government. But when there is an accusation—and we talked with Kim Ives, and he pointed out several instances in which we should be troubled and demanding answers, but there's no hue and cry. Nobody raises their voice. Nobody's out in the street. Nobody's writing letters and demanding a response from the government or the various governments of the United States, especially from cities where you have a large Haitian population. This is unconscionable. And we have to ask the question now, what is happening that we do not have, not even symbolic responses from these various governments in the United States?
Well, the short answer is I don't know, except to say that when you can see and stand by and watch for, you know, nearly 30 years now, where the Clintons have simply walked away from their shenanigans in Haiti. The Red Cross was able to steal billions of dollars and walk away. The earthquake was able to happen, and the levels of devastation were just untold, and everyone just walked away. I think this is par for the course. And to your point, that's why.
If it's par for the course, then something is dramatically wrong with us. And the first order of the day is to point the finger of blame at ourselves. How dare we portray ourselves as this democracy-loving people, and we say nothing and do nothing at a time like this? This is insane, and we ought to be ashamed of ourselves.
Well, as we know, that story that we run around the world and tell about democracy is the biggest lie ever told. So,
yeah, but we need to tell it. We need to tell that we need to tell those lies that have been told. And we need to demonstrate, we need to put our words down on paper emphatically, saying, we are committed. We are not just being ceremonial here. We are committed to a different standard of conduct. So that is the question that hounds me at the moment. What has become, or why is it that the people of the United States are so reticent and unwilling to speak up at the right time? Thanks so much for calling in.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Brother David from Brooklyn, you're on the air. Hello, David, you're on the air. Okay, then Veronica from Delaware, you're on the air.
Hi, good day, how art thou?
I'm okay, thank you. How are you?
Well, it's one or two things I wanted to make sure I cleared up. I have been protesting myself concerning Haiti with Brother Dawood, our branch from UAM. So it even yesterday, there was a protest. So I wanted to make sure I clarified that. Now, I find it just incredible that the DEA could take it upon themselves to go into a sovereign nation and murder a president. We do not condone the murder
of Wait a minute. You're not sure.
Yes.
No one is sure it's the DEA. Nobody is sure that anybody is telling the truth here. So all these bets you have to hold in abeyance.
If I told you my source, you wouldn't question it at all. Okay. Now, because of our different branches of the UAM, Brother Dawood, I trust. I have been with, and I'm saying from school protests to everything that I've been doing for the last 2 years, more than 2 years. I've known the brother over 20 years. And I will say from the Latrice Lumumba Foundation and so forth, I know that my resources are not inaccurate. Now,
First of all, we don't know that. Don't know that.
Okay.
You're saying it because you believe this to be true. And I understand that. If you're a member of an organization and you believe in what you're doing, you believe in what the organization is doing.
I'm saying I believe and I know the person that was...
Yeah, but this is not about that. This is not the time to express personal fidelities. We're looking for an answer to why is there no systemic response, and this is habitual to the point it...
Well, that would be because the media is not on the people's side. The media. The black media is covering some of these stories. Because we're not aware of it does not mean it is not occurring, because, you know, we've been at the United Nations weekly for years, you know, protesting on behalf of Haiti. Okay? That I can say myself. I'm not saying anyone else. I'm saying me.
Do you appreciate the point I'm making? The point I'm making is not where you have shown up with placards and with chants. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about a response at a level that one expects. And that is in the halls of Congress, a response from the White House, a response from the various levels of government. That's the response I'm talking about.
Have they been responding to Haiti? Have they? Have any of these administrations been responding?
And that's my point. Why and do we have, repeat the same thing when we get no response? Well, either we're doing something wrong, well, or they have been successful in thwarting the resolve of the people.
Activists and so forth. One of the sources, while visiting, you know, just to hear Mr. Ives try to malign the two of us with the barbecue gangster that is throwing 82-year-old women out of windows in Haiti, and had the audacity to say that Dawood was with them. Okay? That is not true. And
well, first
I wanted
of all,
to make
wait,
sure.
Wait a minute. Yes. Wait a minute.
Go ahead.
Wait a minute.
It's not personal. I'm saying factual.
It was said. No, I'm saying to you, that was not said on my program. So I can't vouch that he said it.
Oh, he said it on Amy Goodman's show. I'm saying
well, that's
that.
Amy Goodman's show. Go talk to
yes,
Amy Goodman.
Full of crap. Oh, yes, we did. We told her a piece.
Okay. I told you about Amy Goodman years ago.
Yes, you did. Yes, and I knew.
Okay. End of story. End of story. So don't tell me now about what somebody purportedly said on Amy Goodman's show. I have no interest in Amy Goodman.
Which I understand, but Kim Ives had the audacity to try it. How
but you go back again to tell me you again involved in trivia, as far as I'm concerned.
You're right.
I am dealing with what he said on our program here that we share, called Lead Stories. If you have a beef, you go to Amy Goodman.
No, I have a beef with him because he...
Well, you have a beef with Amy Goodman. It was on her show, was it not?
Kim Ives said it. Kim Ives said it.
I know, but it was on her show. And if she is the expert on all things, she has to be called to account. That's your job.
Yes.
That's your job. Don't come to me and park your car.
Oh, no. I just wanted you to know that your friend, Kim Ives, has a problem.
I am not discussing who has a problem personally and who does not have a problem. I don't know what you're saying. I don't know whether it's true or not true. I am not dealing with that. As you can tell from my program, we were dealing with a specific overview. People have a habit of always saying, well, he said this and that wasn't right, and he said that and that wasn't right. I don't know. I'm simply interviewing or conducting an interview to get as much relevant information as possible that people can work with to make sense of a major tragedy. I'm not getting involved in who didn't like what was said, and I'm not into that.
No, he's not a savior, and he cannot pretend to be. You're absolutely right. He angered.
But then
you keep
going
lost.
Back to launch your tirade. He is not a savior. Who said he was? Am I a savior? Have I ever said I am? Don't do that. You belittle your stature when you sink to these levels in order to make a point. Don't do that.
Well, my point is that no one should, Haiti should be able to handle their own policy.
We know that. That is a given. Haiti should be able to handle its own problems. Black people in the United States ought to be able to handle their own problems too, but they're not.
Yes. And the UN needs to leave because they are not helping. And I'm
But you are not helping with this so-called analysis that you're giving, which isn't an analysis. You're making a series of unconnected statements as if they, A, are fact, and B, that they make sense in the scheme of things. They don't. You have to guide us through your reasoning, and you have to prove the legitimacy of the points that you raise. You can't leave, just say things and walk off and leave it to people to come to their own conclusions. That is not the whole point here.
If this man had left when his presidency was over, I think he would still be alive. And the U.S.
would not
have... It's not
about whether he is alive. You see, there you go. If he had done the right thing, he wouldn't be dead. That is super simplistic thinking.
No, that's not true either. No, that's not true. That's not what I was saying.
That is super simplistic thinking. The fact is, we know he's dead.
Yes.
It does not do any good to say, if he had done this, he would not be dead. What does that prove? Where is your analysis?
Say, if he is doing the right thing, that's probably why they would have assassinated him.
Oh, Lord, no. You're missing all of my points here. When you get to the level of offering an analysis, you don't think to simple or simplistic points. You keep it at a level where people can appreciate your argument because you have a panoramic view. You don't come up at this time and you say, well, if he had done this, he'd be alive today. The issue isn't about why he's not alive today. That's not the issue. That's not what we're discussing. We're at a whole different level of discussion. And you're not in it. And I want to know why.
Right. All right.
Okay. Thanks a lot. And that brings us to the end of our program today. We'll continue this discussion. This is the difference I keep pointing out all the time. It's the difference between just saying things and offering an analysis of things. You bring me something that has nothing to do with me, and I want nothing to do with it. Help us all by being focused and by being substantive about what it is you're talking about. And we can have a worthwhile discussion. Other than that, you're just spitting in the wind. And you using precious time to do it. Thanks so much. We'll be back again with each other tomorrow. God willing, and the creek don't rise, as Maya Angelou used to say. Thanks so much for listening today, and thank you for your contributions. This conversation will continue. Bye-bye.